Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm the man on the mountain who says, come on up, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's lovely to have you here.
And I'm the ploughman in the valley with a face full of mud.
Lovely stuff. That's the voice of Luke Moore. He's here.
Just the two of us.
It is, isn't it?
We can make it if we try, just the two of us.
We're going to have a go. The formidable strike force of the Football Ramble, the Moore and Speller partnership.
And what you're thinking, listeners,
will never be broken.
At least they've got their best two on it. It might only be two of them, but at least it's those two. I agree.
Keenan Scholes, whatever you want.
Yeah.
But, you know,
shuffle my chair a little bit. Yeah.
Finally, I don't know what you're thinking, listeners.
So much space.
The Football Ramble has got rid of the dead wood.
Finally, I get a chance to actually speak.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It's the first time that we've only done this with just the two of us, two ramblers.
But in the words of Emil Heskey, chill. We got this.
Yeah, that's it. We're gonna have a lot more of your wonderful contributions, listeners. Thank you very much for them. And we're going to start with an email from a chap called Colin Dunn from New Hampshire. One of our American cousins, eh?
Yeah. Lovely part of the world.
I should say that he mentioned that Clint Dempsey banged a G the other day and won his first C.
Yeah, I saw that.
His first piece of silverware in his career.
I did, yeah. Their equivalent of the FA Cup. Was it the Open Cup?
I believe so. US Open Cup, yeah.
Yeah, I also saw a video while we're on this subject of Clint Dempsey. I'm freestyling here, by the way.
Yeah.
It's not on the running order. Much like Clint Dempsey, I'm freestyling here. Of him rapping at the launch of FIFA 15 in the US. And I'll just end that little anecdote by saying I wanted it to be good.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, that shows how topsy-turvy this show is. We're already talking about the US. We haven't even gone to the Premier League and finished with Europe yet.
Yeah.
But it was an email from Colin Dunn, and he's asking us what our favourite stadiums are.
Good one.
Good question.
Let's not be boring.
Let's not.
Because obviously Tynecastle. My much celebrated football career started on the terraces of Fratton Park, as we all know. But I won't talk about that one. I think mine is probably the Olympic Stadium in Berlin.
That's an excellent start.
Yeah, I think I've been there. We're going there again in November.
I believe so.
Which will be great, hopefully.
Is that a kind of Coliseum affair on the outside?
It is, yeah. Have you not been there?
I have, actually, but it wasn't for a football match.
Right, okay. Oh, really?
Enough said.
Okay.
And I wasn't there in the late 30s for a rally, by the way.
No, okay, yeah. The reason I liked it is because, first of all, you're treated really well. It's a great walk up to the stadium.
Yeah.
The atmosphere outside the stadium is very good, which is also important. The beers are large and plentiful, and you can drink them pitch side. Yeah. And you get a, when I was there, you got a plastic stein.
Yeah.
And each stein had a different...
What you're miming there is quite enormous.
Yeah, it was big. Yeah. It was big. And each stein had a different Hertha Berlin player on it.
That's good.
So you go, oh, I've got so-and-so or whatever. And, yeah. And
oh, he left us last year.
Yeah, no, they changed him. They update him.
Right.
When I was there, it was for a game against Wolfsburg, and it was only about half full, actually, but the noise was still pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And we were right above the ultras behind one of the goals, and they never stopped singing. You have the old guy with the megaphone, the orchestrating the chants and stuff, which is something they don't do enough in English football, I have to say.
Yeah, so, but that, this is kind of a stadium experience. This is not just pure out-and-out stadium.
Yeah,
the structure.
The experience.
Yeah, I like that. It's a fair question.
Oh, you want me to talk about the structure?
No, that's where you've taken the question, because Colin didn't specify that.
Some of the questions will be interpreted.
I think they all will be, for the sake of everybody involved.
What's yours then?
Are you going for the one? We must have a couple more. No, well, I'll tell you what, I'll chip in then.
Yeah.
I mean, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take you to South America.
There you go.
As we must. I've been to, as it's nicknamed, the chocolate box, the Bombonera.
The Bombonera.
Where the Boca Juniors play. Mm. And I mean, if we're talking in terms of infrastructure, wee loo. It would be on the list.
Yeah.
I mean, genuinely, Tynecastle Heart Stadium is better than that.
Yeah.
If you're talking about in terms of pure...
That's the only way it's better than that. Is
well,
that
hang
fair?
On. But if we're talking about stadium experience and all that kind of stuff, that is something else. It really... It's an odd stadium if you've ever seen a picture of it. Or seen a match yourselves.
Very sheer, very high.
It is very high indeed. But it's not as the attendance, the capacity is not as big as you'd think, because on one side, in one side of the pitch, you've got it's all boxes.
Yeah,
it's quite odd, really.
I've seen that.
It's quite unique. But the atmosphere is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, just constant noise.
The fans behind one of the goals, the whole thing's just moving the whole time. It's just bouncy.
Yeah.
I nearly got pissed on. It's the only stadium I can say that in.
Yeah.
And that's from a high. That's not someone trying to do it on my side of my leg.
Yeah.
Yeah, they stupidly put the away... I think I've said this before in the round, but they put the away fans above us, you know. But in terms of sheer atmosphere, that would be well up there. I've been to the Maracanã.
Yeah.
Of course, that's got to get a mensch, even though it wasn't finished when I was there. But again, the party atmosphere, the whole thing, being at the Maracanã.
Yeah, you can't argue with that.
You can't argue with that. I remember quite vividly, we went to see a game in the Rio Cup, which is a bit of a party anyway. And you're saying, like, people serving you drinks and all that kind of stuff. It's not so organised there. But I just remember this little...
Well, you don't get served drinks at Olympic Stadium. You have to go and get them. You can drink in front of the game, which you can't do in England.
Well, OK, you kind of get served drinks at the Maracanã, in the sense that there's a guy selling them who comes to you.
Right.
But every now and then, this little guy with his little face, he was probably in his sort of 50s, 60s, but a tiny little bloke with the sweetest face and the nicest little moustache. And he would just suddenly appear in front of my mate and I, smiling with his arms wide open, which compelled us to buy all the stuff that he had.
Going, you're in the Maracanã.
Pretty much what he was saying. I think I was drunk on Tampico, I think it was the orange juice, if anyone's ever had that, sugar-filled to the max. But also, I saw the other side of the stadium, I saw a couple of guys dressed up as superheroes. There was a Batman who was just running around the empty seats on his own, which is possibly the best thing I've seen at a football match.
Mention for the Nou Camp as well, of course.
If you've never been to the Nou Camp, seriously go, because the first time you go to that stadium, it's something else.
Yeah, I agree. It's
it
fantastic.
Really is.
I mean, when you're right on the top tier,
as we were,
as we've been,
surrounded by people smoking
weed. Yeah,
yeah.
It's like watching a game of Kickoff. For those of you of a certain age, you remember that computer game.
Much better though.
Depends on who you're watching, but usually a Barcelona side is much better. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So there we go, Colin. We mentioned a few there.
We've both got the points.
Yeah, that's
because the other two haven't turned up.
That's it. So we're going to do a sort of fairly regular show as normal, but drop in some of your wonderful questions and suggestions.
Listeners, think of yourself as the third and fourth rambler.
If you could.
Yeah, we're not going to leave you right to the end this time.
Well, Dan Polidano's, I'm going to start off with something that he's put. He said, 1 hour on Scottish football, please.
That's ambitious.
The listeners have spoken.
To be fair, they have voted to stay as part of the union, so we should be paying them attention still.
Yeah, I think we should. I think we should very much.
We're not going to though, are we?
Oh, yeah. Do you know what? Kenny Monroe asked me, saying, what way would Craigie Brune have voted in the referendum?
I'll have to leave that to you, mate.
Well, Craig Brown, if you'd have spoken to him about that, he would have talked up both sides.
Yeah.
And then said, but I think it'll be a nothing result.
There you go. There you go.
Let's get us off to a good start.
Yeah.
But yes.
It's always a fallback option.
It is, isn't it?
Craigie Brown.
Well, speaking of fallback options, Alexander Bryant said, topic for the ramble, World Cup 2002, special focus on Sven, please. Ta.
Yeah, that's what you need. I love the way the listeners get a chance to choose the stuff we were talking about.
Doing this.
But they choose the same stuff.
You're doing it.
It means we must be doing something right.
It is like the Stockholm syndrome, isn't it?
Yeah.
Marvellous. Well, let's kick off with the Premier League. We have to. Leicester 5, Man United 3.
Yeah.
My giddy aunt. When you're thinking to yourself, oh, there's only two of us on the show. Wonder how many talking points we'll have. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I was
ruddy hell.
I didn't think this would happen, but just after the first game on Sunday, obviously Man City Chelsea's about to start, I was thinking, I don't know if I'm up for this. I don't know if I can get up for this now. Because I was just buzzing off Leicester City, Man United.
Super Sunday?
Very much so.
I think we can... There you go.
Because I think that... We'll come on to this in a minute, I'm sure, but I think the Man City-Chelsea game was a much better game than was given credit for because of what happened before it.
Yeah, yeah.
If that had just been stuck... If that was the first game, you'd be going, that's a great game. You know, or if that was a Monday night game, you'd be really happy with that. But because the Leicester City-Man United game was so good, in a slightly different way, you would argue, you almost didn't get the credit at the City game.
But the two totally different games, and that's the beauty of football. One is an absolute goal fest, where there's mistakes galore. There's some wonderful moments of quality. Manchester City versus Chelsea is very much a stalemate. It's a tactical, much more of an obvious tactical affair
there's
going on.
There's plenty
on.
To enjoy, but as you said, in a different way.
Totally, yeah.
But I'm really pleased that that the front three... first of all, I'm really pleased that Nigel Pearson, who is a hard man...
Oh, yeah.
Can we just say, he's never really... I know they haven't been in the Premier League that long, but I hope he starts to become more a part of the conversation on the whole hardest managers debate, which comes up every so often.
We'll reconvene on that soon.
Because Pearson is a strong, silent type.
Yeah, he is. And I like how he sits up in the stands.
Yeah.
Reminds me of a man we often mention is Big Walter.
Yeah.
Walter Smith. Again, strong, silent type. Sit up in the stands.
Diego Simeone.
Just watch.
Because he has to.
There's nothing silent about that, man.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Yeah. But
he'll be back down soon.
So, yeah, so I really like the way that Pearson played with three strikers against Manchester United, because that was a brave thing to do. And, of course, Nugent can slot in there and help out in midfield. Mm. And Ojoa can hold the ball up very well. And Vardy's, of course, got lots of pace.
He was involved in a lot of things.
Those front three are such a dynamic front three that... I'm starting to think Leicester might be a little bit better than people are giving them credit for. Mm. And they might... Because I'm not sure if it was on here that I said this at the start of the season. Leicester's start was so tough. So tough.
Well, we said that. We were worried that they might only get a point from the first five games.
Yeah.
Are they up to seventh,
I think? They are. They're in seventh,
incredible.
Yeah, they got 8 points, I think, already.
Oh, after a really tough start. Now, how much does that galvanise you? How much self-belief does that give?
Oh, the confidence they'll take is amazing. And
they're enjoying it.
They are.
And these aren't just 1-0s or, you know, they've got a scrappy point. They beat Stoke 1-0, was it, the other week?
Yeah.
And so on. But scoring five goals in a game, everyone's had a bloody good time.
They have.
Haven't they just?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it.
The fans are enjoying it already.
Confidence will be sky high.
My goodness. Let's hope they don't do a Hull.
No.
Under Phil Brown.
Well, don't bother getting any points for us.
They get to Christmas with one almighty hangover, and it takes them about 5 months to clear it.
The whole City season was, they got to Christmas absolutely flying, like a dog with two dicks. Couldn't believe their luck, right? Last 4 or 5 months of the season, I think they picked up like one win or 1 point or something. Mm. We stayed
Everyone
up.
Took their annual leave.
Let's have a sing-song. Wasn't it? Phil Brown, let's have a sing song. Yeah. You can't remember your last win, but let's have a sing song anyway.
If you put the hard work in, you don't have to after a while.
Yeah.
It was the
football equivalent of when a sprinter in the Olympic 100-metre first round...
He won it.
Yeah, he just slows up for the end, gets caught, but just about makes it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, amazing. But anyway, so Leicester, I thought that... of course, you need to touch on the fact that... I'm sure you agree that penalty decision was really changed the momentum of the game.
It did. Some people say, it was good that Van Gaal didn't mention it. Yes, it was, because the referee didn't cause a number of Manchester United players to make mistakes after that.
Yeah.
But it is true, those decisions, no matter what people say, they do make a difference to the game. Manchester United actually played quite well in the first half. And everybody watching, I'm sure, thought, oh, well, you know, off the back of the 4-0 win against QPR and one or two others, are they back? Are they clicking? Mm. Are they getting in their stride? It was good
QPR
to see.
QPR and not a measure.
That's right. Keep it away from home. Yeah. Not a measure for anybody's standards. But you saw Falcao when he left his man for dead, when he hit the bar with that great effort. Yeah. Di Maria scoring a wonderful goal.
Scoop.
Exactly. A slip and a scoop.
We can categorically confirm, because a lot of people have asked us about this.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Marcus. I'm relieved that you called it that way. A slip and a scoop.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. You know, Di Maria scored a great goal. Rooney and him are linking up there. Mm. Van Persie scored. You suddenly think, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Now Manchester United are beginning to play. Now, who knows, you know, chaos theory comes into it. We'll never know if the referee hadn't have given a penalty there, but he did. And at 3-2, you know, the difference steps up.
Yeah.
And away we go. And the game changes. Manchester United start to worry a little bit. Leicester suddenly go flying forward. It did change the game. There's no two ways about that. And it wasn't a penalty. And it was a foul on Raphael.
Yeah, you got to remember,
but these things will happen in football.
They will. And as a striker is always going to do that. If a striker doesn't do that, he's not doing his job properly. He's got to take a chance. You know better than I do. A striker will always run around the back of a defender in case he misses a header. A striker will always go in for a challenge in case he gets away with it. Because look at Ian Wright's career. 9 times out of 10, he won't get away with it. 9 times out of 10, it will be a lost cause. Yeah. But he changes the game there. And the referee has made a mistake. I agree with you. He made a mistake. It probably was a penalty, but the foul beforehand...
Do you think it was?
I think it was, yeah.
Okay.
The foul, but it was a soft one, but I think it probably
definite
was.
Definite foul beforehand.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, definitely.
But he's made the referee make a decision, as you say.
Well, it's a number of actions that have happened. So there are a number of things to blame. Of course, the referee's got the ultimate discretion, but Vardy's made the challenge. Raphael has known he's coming in, and rather than barge him, he's gone to take the foul. Assuming he'll get a foul, in most cases, like I say, 99 times out of 100, he gets that decision. But secondly, Raphael's not kept his head and tried to defend properly. He's brought him down, however soft it is, and obviously the referee gave a penalty. When Nugent put that away and then Cambiasso pounced to make it... It was Cambiasso got the equaliser, wasn't it?
It's glorious to see Cambiasso.
It was really poor defending by United.
It was very poor.
It was like that one decision completely informed the rest of their play for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
It was incredible. They're such a top-heavy side. It's unbelievable. I've never seen a team I can think of in the Premier League that attack with such force with the players they've got. And they will go on to score loads of goals this season, you know, I'm sure of that.
Mm.
But defend so poorly. They've got no link between their attack and the defence, and they've got no confidence in their defence either.
No.
And if you look at someone like... See, I didn't think Tyler Blackett played that badly. I thought he did okay.
Mm.
Of course, he was sent off and he made a mistake or two, but it's no environment for a player of that experience to be playing. And Marcus Rocco was completely anonymous. He was poor, I thought. I think United have signed him because they think he's tough. Because he's got tattoos and he's Argentinian. He's not tough.
No, I think Van Gaal signed him pretty much on the basis of the semi-final.
Hmm.
But in that rationale, he should have gone for Ron Vlaar.
Yeah, right. Well, there was talk of that.
But you do, you know, as you say, worry for your Manchester United defence, because in previous seasons, Blackett would have come in and he'd have had Ferdinand or Vidic to shepherd him through the game.
Exactly. And you've got to look at the classic, of course, they're Manchester United. They should be doing better. They should have strengthened at the back. I think they probably tried to and they couldn't get the players they wanted.
Mm.
So that's what's happened now. They're stuck with the players they've got. But if you look at Tyler Blackett, it's easy to get on his back, but he's coming in not only in a really difficult time for United in general, but he's got no real experience around him of any note. I mean,
and all eyes are on Manchester United, as they always are.
He's also playing against a rapido quick striker, which is what no one wants.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how old or how much a player is. You can't legislate for pace like that. And if someone's sprinting at you, they could be a non-league player, which he was not that long ago, or certainly maybe not non-league football league, whatever it was, I forget. And he's absolutely skinned him. But for Vardy's goal when he made it 4-3, as Danny Murphy said on Match of the Day, I think it was Wayne Rooney was nearly back there trying to sort it out. And you can see Rooney's frustration.
This is the problem with Rooney. I've talked in the past about how being the captain of United may signal a resurgence in Rooney's career. But he's still in danger of falling into that trap of trying to do it all himself. You see him after one of the goals, he was going crazy, having a go at everyone and stuff. Of course, that is your role in part as a captain. But it's a fine line between trying to do it all yourself and digging everyone out when you've actually got to step up and be encouraging and give constructive criticism. United, I think they're at home to West Ham at the weekend, which Nick goes without saying is a must win for them. I mean, they've really got to start, because that's going to affect their confidence badly, and they just cannot stop conceding goals.
Go on, sorry.
I was just saying, they find it difficult to defend as a unit, as to sort of talk to each other and do what they should be doing as a defensive unit. Because when you play in that position, you're not just an individual. I'm going to talk a bit more about individuals in football in a minute because someone's emailed us about it. Mm. But you're part of a unit. You're part of a team. You're almost part of a team within a team.
Yep.
And you've got to communicate with each other. And I'm sure they do on the training ground and stuff, but you can't let it all go to pieces as soon as a referee decision goes against you or you don't have a great start. Or it's the same with Liverpool, which we'll talk about in a bit. You need to make decisions almost as a unit, and they don't do that at all, chiefly because they've got no experience. They've got players who either aren't good enough, aren't experienced enough, or aren't used to the league, and that's a terrible combination.
Yeah, and I wonder, though, as well, that is De Gea the type of keeper to bark instructions to that back line and help out there? You know, because if he's not doing that so much, I don't know if he is or not, but he doesn't have the aura of someone that does. Mm. If you've got a back three or a back four, they're a little bit in and out. Rocco's just signed for them recently. Who's taking responsibility, which is why, actually, you think to yourself, oh, maybe they should have... I forget the ins and outs. I think he was going quite a bit before anyway. But that mightn't have been an idea of kept Rio Ferdinand on for another year.
Well, Ferdinand seems to maintain that he was essentially forced out.
Yeah, which seems strange because his ability, obviously, he's a bit older now, and his pace maybe isn't quite so much there.
But the experience against a team like Leicester.
The experience and a calm head and someone who's going to organise it a bit more.
He's not been great for QPR, though, Ferdinand.
No. But even, Phil Jones and Chris Smalling, people perhaps been surprised that they haven't learnt as quickly and developed as quickly as they may have hoped. You could argue there. But Johnny Evans as well is another one. But again, Johnny Evans is playing in partnerships with Vidic and Ferdinand.
Yeah.
And you can say, well, come on, step up. But it all seems so sudden, and under Moyes it was obviously pretty, not disastrous, but it wasn't great. So yeah, I think they'll probably rue letting Vidic and Ferdinand go at the same time.
Oh, that goes without saying, yeah. And just on this thing we've touched on here, Oscar Wen and John Proven have both emailed in, or coming through Facebook actually, saying, Oscar says, why do you think there have been so many games with big or crazy scores over the last few seasons compared to those of yore, especially involving the big teams playing each other? Do you think this is simply due to a decline in the number of top-class defenders are more indicative of an underlying shift in managerial philosophy? And John Proven says, why is it there are loads of brilliant forward players in today's game and relatively few decent defensive players? I sort of bracketed them up together because I think they're sort of similar questions, really. I think it's actually...
Basically, why are big scores back?
Yeah, indeed, as Jim would say, bully for big scores.
Yeah,
I find it really interesting that now we are, in my mind, moving towards a culture of the individual in football. So whether that is through the increased attention on computer games, stuff like that, a chance for you to become the guy who beats everyone's scores and you play an individual character in a computer game, or whether it's an increased attention on the PFA awards, stuff like that. It seems to me that individualism in the society as a whole is much more focused upon, which means that you get a lot of people who grow up now, like I said to you before about Raheem Sterling, and Daniel Sturridge, those sort of players. They seem to me like players who've grown up playing FIFA, playing those sort of games, and in many ways it benefits them because they try skills they wouldn't have tried before. They take influence from all over the world, not just in the Premier League where they hoof it around, or in English football where they hoof it around. But it means that actually, if you become a defender, you're not going to get all the plaudits. Yeah. You're not going to get the highlights and the headlines. And so maybe people don't want to be defenders as much as they used to. Mm-hmm. And so you see a lot more attacking players available. Mm-hmm. Because it's not really that easy to come up with a list of, say, 15 or 20 amazing top-quality defenders.
Yeah.
But the amount of attacking players are around is incredible compared to that, don't you think?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, and going on from your talk about individuality and the increased pressure and scrutiny and media eye on that. I mean, Messi and Ronaldo. There's so much to talk about. It's always Messi v Ronaldo, Messi v Ronaldo.
It's always about who's the best player, isn't it?
But Messi, look at the players in that team. Mm. You know, that classic... I mean, they're already a classic side. It was only a few years ago. And Ronaldo in a team full of world beaters as well. Yet it's billed as one individual against the other. I think that... Might there be an argument that if you look at defenders as well, Europe or Northern Europe, Britain, perhaps more specifically, has woken up to the attacking fullback idea. Mm. And so, fullbacks obviously in South America are always much more attacking anyway. But the fullbacks, certainly, I remember Jack Charlton said in the 1990 World Cup of 94, certainly around that time, that the fullback was the most important area on the pitch because they are the ones who had the space in front of them. So perhaps you've had new ideas of fullbacks coming through as being more attacking. So therefore, you've only got two defenders left on the pitch, really, the guys who are out and out defenders.
So maybe Maybe there's just less of them.
But maybe just, I mean, it could just be that's the way things have gone. It's an unexplainable one. You could argue, why do we not have so many top-class goalkeepers as well at the moment, which may be an argument to more goals, perhaps. More attacking philosophies with coaches. I mean, the World Cup recently was extraordinary compared to the previous World Cup. But the previous World Cup, 2010, coaches were far more cautious.
But if you take it into the World Cup, then you have to look at whether, because managers get less time with the players for a World Cup, do they think, well, we won't focus as much on that, we'll focus more on scoring? Or do you think we'll focus more on keeping it tight?
Well, in 2010, it was definitely keep it tight, wasn't it? The 4-2-3-1 was, I mean, it's still a formation that's very, very prevalent now. But in 2010, it was a very cautious 4-2-3-1. Whereas in World Cup, maybe the fact it was in Brazil, everyone's been on the cocktail. You know, bollocks, let's go for it.
Spirit of Ronaldinho.
I mean, who knows, really?
I think it's more to do with a culture of individualism, personally.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. There is a definite lack of defenders, which was the point I made the other week about David Luiz, which is why he went for so much. You know, make what you will about that. But defenders really are at a premium.
Yeah.
At the moment. And it's quite extraordinary to see. I mean, if you just take the English national team, what, you know, I'm sure most English supporters wouldn't do for a top, top class centre back.
Yeah.
I'd rather, to be perfectly honest with you, I'd rather a Jerome Boateng who's be English than, I don't know, someone like Ibrahimovic or someone like that. Because I think England need a player, a centre-back. You know, Cahill is decent. He's had a very good Chelsea career. But you compare that to England, you know, 5 to 10 years ago, whatever
it was. We did that well. We did defending well, yeah.
We actually did. Yeah. There's your 2002 reference under Ols Fenegans. You know, he actually organised the back line very well. But he had Ferdinand. You know, Carragher couldn't get in the team. But King didn't really much get in the team. Woodgate's obviously injured a lot, but again, players.
But do you not think that everywhere you look in football coverage these days, whether it be through... look at advertising campaigns. They're all with certain star players, aren't they?
True.
There's always, if you look at computer games, a lot of talk about which player is going to be on the front of which version of which game.
Yeah.
There's always talk about who's the best player in the world.
Yeah.
There's always talk about who's going to win the PFA award.
Yeah.
I mean, how often compared to
statistics now? I mean, we're in the age of statistics.
Yeah, the assists, the assists, and the goals.
This player's done that.
But how often have you heard the conversation, "Who's the best team in the world"? Nowhere near as much as you've heard, "Who's the best player in the world"? So therefore, attacking players are much more geared towards that. You rarely get a defender being credited and praised as one of the best players in the world just for being a defender. I mean, yeah, Cannavaro won the World Player of the Year when Italy won it in 2006. It doesn't happen that often.
That was very rare. But I think also that, I mean, might there be, you know, where do footballers normally come from? They're normally working class backgrounds in this country anyway. I'd have thought that would probably be similar in the world. If you look at the cultures of inner-city football, it's very skills-based, as you say.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the players, I mean, you and I have played against, the five-a-side pitches around London, they have been top draw.
Yeah.
The kind of skills that I would shame some professional footballers.
Yeah.
How do you beat them? You get organised.
Yeah.
You knock the ball around. They get frustrated very quickly, those types of players. And actually, if players who are the natural picking grounds of where footballers come from are really focused on that kind of individuality, they've got good pace, they've got good skill, they've got good technique, they can shoot well, all that kind of stuff, that lends itself to an attacking player. Doesn't lend itself to a defender.
And also, the best player is always going to the attacking position. So what happens is, in this country at least, if you're a good player for your team at an age group, then you play in the attacking positions. Then the slowly worse players generally move back and back and back. And that's why you probably have much more standout players in attacking positions as well. But that's more of a general point. That's not a trend. I think that's always been the case in this country.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. I mean, long may it continue, though.
Yeah.
We're getting the big scores. Hopefully it'll be still there.
Defending is dead. It is dead. No one does it. No one bothers. You know.
John Terry does.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah. Not for much longer.
When he's gone, then the floodgates will really be
open. Speaking of John Terry.
Yeah, indeed. Well, Manchester City won, Chelsea won. Super Frankie Lampard.
It's
great, wasn't it?
A lot of people have said this, but
written in the
stars. A lot of people have been annoyed with commentators saying, "You couldn't have scripted it." You could have easily scripted it. It's the easiest thing to script in the world.
You couldn't have scripted it 2 years ago, but when he went to Manchester City, you could definitely script it.
I think people have got "you couldn't script it" mixed up with "and it follows the script." Because there are several things in that game you couldn't script, which I won't bother going into, because it's just limited by your own imagination.
But
you can script that.
Yeah, if Gary Lineker suddenly went into management, chances are he'd be given the Leicester City job somewhere down the line. Yeah. But if he got given that job, I've no doubt he's not interested in management.
Don't do Nigel out of a job. He's doing all right.
No, well, you know, but you get what I'm saying.
God, just beat United 5-3. You're unsettling him.
And if Lineker got the Leicester City job, people go, "Oh, you couldn't script it."
Yeah.
No, you could, that's the one place he would definitely.
Another
go.
Example. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh dear. Pete Donaldson and Jim were in the studio in the next week at the Ramble. You couldn't script it. Yeah, there's maybe more of a... Yeah. Anyway, we'll leave that there. Manchester... I mean, I actually thought what Jose Mourinho said about him after was quite funny. He said when he decided to go to a direct competitor to Chelsea, then the love story's over. He did a professional job. People never forget what Chelsea people do. It happened to me when I was a manager of Inter, because he was received very warmly when he came back to Chelsea. Jose Mourinho in Inter. And he said it's Chelsea's culture and beauty. And to be fair to those Chelsea fans, they very much applauded him when he came on the pitch and after the game as well. Yeah. I mean, it would be a bit of a disgrace if they didn't do that.
I'd like to have seen him do the Beattie.
What, Lampard in front of them? or the Adebayor, because it was up the other end.
Yeah, could have done the Adebayor, yeah. That'd have been good.
Frank, what are you doing?
Start kissing the badge? Would you have a bit of that?
Yeah. Beating his chest, shouting, Frankie Lampard.
But as for the game itself, I thought it was a really great game for different reasons to the United game, as we've already said. I thought City...
With that small team playing?
I know.
Pellegrini really, really needs to grasp the concept, right? If people go away to the Etihad, they know they're going to be... there's going to be an onslaught of very attacking and very good attacking players coming at them. Do not be surprised if you've got a backline with John Terry at the heart of it, if they're going to play a little bit deeper, like they did last season where they won 1-0 and they defend.
Well, like Stoke did.
He really needs to understand there's a lot of ways to win a football match.
Yeah. You can't complain about that because...
Learn to break them down then.
Yeah, I don't think Chelsea were too defensive.
No, I don't think
compared to last season... They weren't too bad, Chelsea.
But the game last season when they won 1-0 was a brilliant game as well.
Yes.
I love Mourinho in those games, actually. Yeah, okay, he doesn't play the tiki-taka style.
Yeah.
But if everybody did, that would be a bit boring.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know,
how good was Mangala, by the way?
Yeah.
Such a good...
That's why Mangala was 32 million?
Yeah.
He had three French caps, £32 million. There you go, defenders are at a premium.
Yeah, it's true. Those two players just showed, him and company, I mean, showed how to play against Diego Costa. You get right up against him. Yep. Don't give him a second. Of course, he had that chance where he hit the post, but he's a top quality player. He's always going to get a chance for himself, probably, isn't he, through 90 minutes. That's just what strikers are like.
He's there to be wound up, but isn't he?
Oh, he is. Absolutely right. And they did exactly the right thing. Of course, Zabaleta
got the better of Zabaleta.
Zabaleta paid for it with his position on the field, of course, but they did the right thing. And I actually thought City were worthy of a goal because they started off really well, didn't they?
Mm.
And they're unlucky not to score early on. And then when they got the end, Milner was very good as well.
Milner was great, and I'm so pleased Milner put in a shift like that. See, there you go. It's the language. He put in a shift.
Yeah.
Milner didn't put in a shift. He played really well and had a lot of flair.
But
play.
He's always going to get accused of being.
I know.
Like
well,
that.
I've just done it myself. Yeah. I don't. It's like that Twitter account, boring James Milner. Yeah. A load of rubbish.
Yeah.
You know, like it's harsh. I think he's an excellent player. He's been a bit unfortunate at England level because of the. You could argue it's the ineptitude of other players in the squad that he's had to compensate.
Yeah.
That he's not been able to go and spread those majestic wings of his.
Yeah.
But the setup for Lampard. I mean, it was a great ball over by Silva. I think great run by Milner.
That's why Mourinho doesn't like Schürrle, isn't it? That's why he doesn't. That's why he doesn't start Schürrle.
Is that right?
Well
I suppose because he uses Schürrle as basically as the hipsters would say a false nine.
Well, Schürrle's got this concentration problem where he just keeps getting caught out. And
Schürrle's all about attack.
Yeah, absolutely right, yeah. And so they got caught out because he lost his man. They nipped in there and scored, and Lampard was obviously not being picked up either. I think Chelsea had worked really hard to get to the position they're in. Of course, those City were down to 10 men, but they didn't pick Lampard up. And if any team knows what to do, you think, well...
No, he's only 36.
Yeah.
He won't make a classic Lampard run and get on the end of... Wasn't it weird to see Lampard beating John Terry to a ball and slotting in?
Did you see what Terry said to Lampard in the game after the game?
What did he say?
When he went to shake his hand, it looked like he said, "I fucking knew it." I thought it was quite funny.
Fair enough, eh?
And I enjoyed it because it wasn't racist.
Yeah. Well, it couldn't have been.
No, exactly. I'm sure he would have found a way if he needed to. But that was a good game, and it was also really important that that City didn't lose that game, wasn't it? Because they're already a bit off the pace, and they want to go sort of more than a few points behind them. They're 5 points off them now.
But it's a vital goal, because when you're down to 10, you're 1-0 down and one man down against the team that are running, beginning to run away with it. You cannot lose that game. And the man Frank Lampard's gone in there and he scored. I mean, it was a classic Lampard goal, drifting into the box fairly late.
Yeah,
getting on the end of it, and he had a chance, didn't he, to put the other one away?
But
it was after the woods. He sort of looked a bit shell shocked, and he was a bit like, yeah.
It would have been. I mean, of course, he's a professional. He's there to do a job. It's the next phase of his career now. But I don't think you'd be really very empathetic as a human being if he didn't realise it was supposed to be quite odd for him.
Yeah, I mean, but again, he didn't apologise.
No.
Because he meant to do it. Yeah. He didn't. That's what I'm saying. That celebration there, if you're going to not celebrate, just be a bit subdued.
He wasn't stopping everyone else celebrating.
No,
was
he wasn't, yeah. I did look at that and I just thought, if only he was 5 years younger, to see that him in that England squad, do you know what I mean, again and all.
Yeah.
Because actually to see him playing a bit. Oh, well, anyway, pointless conversation. What am I talking about? Sorry, everybody.
Technically speaking, all England conversations are pretty pointless.
Yeah, I was going to say. He's had over, how many caps? And I'm like, but if we only had another 5 years out of him, sorry. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Why don't we talk about Liverpool next?
We could talk about Liverpool next. Let's do. Do you think Zabaleta? It was a sending off, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't know what the commentators were talking about, saying it was harsh. I mean, I understand Neville and Carragher saying they'd like to have seen the game flow a bit more. And I agree the referee did stall that a bit early with his cards. But he's got to follow the law. You can't just let everything go because it's a big game.
That's it.
I don't really subscribe to the idea that you have to referee these games differently, personally. I mean, I think I defended Howard Webb in the World Cup final in 2010, saying, "Well, what do you want? What do you want from him? You know, he's got to do. He's there to do a job.
That's right.
The players are doing pushing their luck. Then he's got to stamp it out.
Well, basically, you've got two very much opposing sides. You can't please all of the people all the time.
And but City very, very obviously targeted Diego Costa and thought that was the way to get at him and get about him, and they did that. And you know. Fair enough, Zabaleta paid for it, but it sort of worked. I mean, Costa didn't really... He had one chance where he hit the post, I think. He had a header right at the keeper, but other than that...
Yeah, I thought it was quite nice seeing the sky blue versus the royal blue.
I found it odd.
But the Chelsea away kit is white.
It is, yeah.
So that would be probably more of a clash.
Yeah, but I think City have got a change kit, haven't they?
And they're at home.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Is there a third kit flying around there in that Chelsea dressing room?
A football kit political hot potato is what it is.
Well, and with just the two of us, we can't possibly tackle
no,
it.
No, no.
Before we go to Liverpool, this is the thing. It was such a great weekend. I mean, we could talk about Southampton, but they've not made the cut this week after a great result and a great start. But, I mean, a little mention to West Brom.
Yes.
Patrick J. Green said, "Why are Spurs so Spursy?"
They're very poor.
He means as well, don't you?
I mean, it's tempting to chuck in the old post-Europe come-down thing, but I think they made 10 changes, Spurs.
Yeah, they did in the Europa League.
Yeah, not really a huge amount of crossover there.
They look better organised than Spurs. They caused them problems consistently going forward. Berahino looked lively as always. And West Brom looked good at the back with Lescott, didn't he?
Yeah, was that his debut?
I think it might have been.
Yeah, he's a good sign for them.
You forget about Lescott, don't you?
I think the West Brom might struggle this season still, though.
Yeah. I mean, they might well do, but a fabulous result anyway. So go on then, West Ham 3, Liverpool 1. There was talk on Match of the Day 2 of Sam Allardyce trying to play a different way with West Ham this season. Obviously, West Ham and Big Sam were absolutely given pelt. Well, Big Sam was given pelters last season for playing in a sort of boring way, if you like. And we kind of defended him and sort of said, well, I mean, loathe as well to defend Big Sam sometimes, but you sort of think, if he's managing your side, you'll stay in the division. Now, is that good enough?
Yeah.
Do you want to kick on? Do you want to sort of take the gamble? I mean, we've got a question from, where are we now? Josh Oro, and he says, is being a football fan about being entertained? There's cases of long ball misery at West Ham and Mansfield Town. I'll take your word for the Mansfield stuff.
I think...
What do you think of the West Ham? I mean, he's trying to mix it up.
To answer his question, I think that it depends on your outlook. I mean, I personally go to football games to be entertained. I love football and I like watching it and stuff, but it's not the be-all end of my life if my team get beat. I want us to put a performance together and entertain me for an afternoon. It's a pastime, isn't it? But some people really want to win. It means everything to them when their team wins, and I understand that's point of view as well. But on the Big Sam thing, I mean, he's starting to play a much more progressive style this season. I think they've strengthened really well in the summer, haven't they? Their signings have been great. And actually, going into this game, I previewed this game for Betfair, where I work, And I said that I think West Ham have been unlucky. And I genuinely thought going into that game, they've been unlucky. They've been a bit sloppy. They lost at home to Spurs, of course. I think this is the first game at home they've won this season. But yeah, they were unfortunate.
Good win away to Palace, cool.
Yeah, they did. And I don't mean to get on the back of Liverpool here, but they had this coming. They had this coming. Mm. The bottom line is with Liverpool, I feel like I say it every week, and I probably do, so apologies. They have to play with tempo. If they don't play with tempo and move the ball quick and use the players that they've got in the style that Rodgers clearly prefers to play in, right, they won't get any success. Right, that's one point. They didn't do that against West Ham. They were caught cold. They got conceded far too early. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you never want to concede, but they conceded way earlier than they would have liked, of course. Secondly, if you're going to lose that many goals in your team, through Suarez going and Sturridge
being injured.
You've got to sort out your defensive problems.
Yeah.
They've got worse at the back.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, they've got worse at the back this season.
Three defeats in five games in the league so far.
An unconvincing
win in the Champions League against poor opposition at home. You do think to yourself, blimey, they're not going to hit the heights of last season at this rate.
Well, that's not going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen. I think whether people admit it or not, I think there's certainly a feeling I can detect that last season was their chance to do something really good, and they didn't make it happen for one reason or another. Not completely their fault. Man City are a good team, but that was the chance they had there. It was almost like a perfect storm of circumstances. Yeah. Didn't happen. Fine, yeah. That's how it goes. You move on. But I wonder whether, I'm not sure, I'll be interested in how many Liverpool fans agree with me here. I wonder if Brendan Rodgers has got to take a step back and go back to basics a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think he's trying a little bit too hard with the teams he's picking. I mean, he rested Sterling last week and that didn't go well.
In the Champions League?
Yeah. No, because he played him in the Champions League. He didn't play him in the league game, did he?
No, he scored against West Ham.
Yeah, the week before. He played around with that, didn't work. He lost to Villa, didn't they? Mm. Remember, you with me now?
Mm, sorry. Back in the room.
And at the weekend just gone, he plays his formation. He plays Barini up front. He's not had a look in.
No. Right?
So he plays Barini up front with Balotelli. For me, that's a tailor-made game for Lambert. That's what you've signed Lambert for.
Yeah.
Go to West Ham away.
You forget Lambert.
Lambert up front, play three behind. Mm-hmm. And not only is he not, in my view, playing the right team, he changes it around after 20 minutes.
Mm.
You know, you're trying too hard. Go back to basics, drill your team properly at the back. Mm-hmm. I don't know, they need to get another defensive coaching or something, because they're much worse at the back from what I've seen this season than they were last season.
It was interesting, Agger came out and said, you know, Rodgers is a great coach and all that, but they had big differences, and he kind of left under a little bit of a cloud, and you think, well, someone like Agger with a bit of experience, actually, was that a bit of a loss?
Mm. I've got a little message here from Josh Steer, which I'll send it your way, Marcus. Is Rodgers a successful manager in the transfer market?
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of the players he signed. I mean, the fullback Moreno, I think he brought in, seems to have been all right.
I think he's done okay.
Yeah, I think he's done all right.
He's been one of the better players at the back for that.
Balotelli, you've got to say, is an interesting one.
I think he struggles to sign defensive players.
Yeah. They were trying to get, was it Lovren?
Mm. They've got Lovren.
Sorry, not Lovren, Schneidlin.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Schneidlin would have been perhaps a good addition.
In the midfield.
But, I mean, Lovren on paper is a good... you've got to say that it is perhaps early days as well. But the one thing I'm slightly concerned about is when he said, I want to make sure Sterling doesn't burn out, so I'll rest him. Sterling will burn out because he seems to be the only one who's going to grab a game by the scruff of the neck in that team at the moment. I mean, he took his goal superbly well.
There are other ways to reduce his responsibilities, and that would be to strengthen the side around him.
Yeah, well, that's the point I'm making, yeah. But, I mean, what about West Ham? You know, the diamond in midfield seems quite fashionable at the moment. That's what they were doing, and Downing was at the top. Downing seems to be flourishing.
He really enjoyed that third goal, didn't he?
He did.
He really enjoyed that. When he played that through ball, he really loved that.
Yeah.
I like to see that. I like to see, do you know what? To me, that celebration said, I went to Liverpool, it didn't work out for me, and now I want to prove to them that I'm good enough.
Yeah.
And he really enjoyed that celebration. And I wouldn't begrudge him that at all.
No apology there.
Well, I wouldn't begrudge him it.
No, of course.
That's part of the game.
But is he one of those players? Is there a shift now in thinking, and perhaps the diamond again lends itself to that, that talented players who can dribble with the ball and have a little bit of pace and a little bit of technique, because Downing has got good attributes, you know, he's a decent player. Unfortunately, Downing was one of those guys who was given far too much responsibility and was put in England sides when perhaps he shouldn't have been. So bring those players inside. You know, a great example was Danny Murphy. It's weird, isn't it, when you think about Danny Murphy's earlier career and at Spurs and maybe even Charlton as well. if my memory serves me correctly, he's farmed out on the wing.
Yeah.
Fulham put him right in the centre of the park.
Yeah.
And that's where he's dictating the play. And Sterling has obviously been put in the centre now. And Downing as well, just a few examples, you know.
So yes, I think West Ham have done okay. I think it's going to be a real conundrum for them when... Because the commentator during the Liverpool game showed Kevin Nolan in the stand and said, oh, and it's only going to get better for them when Nolan and Carroll come back. And I was thinking, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
I think they might be benefiting from not having those guys.
Well, having a more cultured player like Downing in there instead of Nolan. Now, Nolan's a very effective player.
But he's not very subtle.
No.
And Carroll, the problem with the Carroll thing is the politics demands that he has to play because he costs so much money.
He's
your man you want to bring in from the bench, isn't he?
That's right.
I don't really think, the way West Ham are playing at the moment, yeah. I think they're doing okay. They've made some good signings. Mm-hmm. They've improved their team. I think that Cresswell, that's a great player as well, yeah. Fullback. Carroll, you want to introduce him for something a bit different. Unfortunately, the way he plays, he might be destined to have his career being a bit like that.
Yeah.
Just being introduced from the bench, unfortunately.
Like that bloke who played for the England field hockey team.
Yes.
You know, just came on for
his name? Just come on for the penalty corners, yeah. Didn't he? I think he's from around my neck of the world.
Oh,
I do know who you mean, yeah.
Again,
you're lucky I do remember that, because it's a very arch thing to say with just the two of us on the show.
Yeah.
Normally you've got a bit of a safety net. So someone will remember him.
Again, just got to have a quick mention to Crystal Palace beating Everton 3-2 away. I love Warnock at the end of the game. He went, oh, a fabulous game, weren't it? Great end-to-end stuff.
Yeah, it was.
I love
Everton
that.
Lost that game at home to Palace last season.
They
I believe,
did, yeah. By the same margin, was it?
Well, listen, Everton
Tim
and Liverpool.
Tim Howard had a bad one.
He did, didn't he? Ooh. Everton and Liverpool have got to get used to playing European football. Didn't have it last season.
Everton.
They really have to sort it out.
Everton conceded 13 goals in five games.
It's not been a great start for them, no.
Dear,
their squad isn't big enough. It's not big enough to play in Europa as well.
Yeah.
And I know Martinez is the sort of guy who will want to take it seriously.
That's
and
right.
It might be to the detriment of their form. I thought they'd be good this season, and they still might be.
Mm.
But I don't think they're... Based on that Palace game, it doesn't look like they've adjusted so far very well to European football.
Indeed.
Because
although
they had a good win against Wolfsburg, that's worked pretty hard for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Aston Villa and Arsenal. Big game at the top of the league, or close to the top of the league. Ozil and Welbeck combining well. Nice to see.
It was nice to see.
That's what happens when you put Ozil in his favoured position, perhaps.
Sort of 6 minutes of madness or something for Villa, wasn't it?
Like 3 minutes, was it?
3 minutes, was it?
Okay. I love Welbeck. I think he looks like a thoroughly good chap.
Very likeable guy, yeah, definitely.
And took his goal very well. An assist as well.
Good for him to get off the mark, for sure.
Off and running. So good to see those two to link it up as well. Just to finish with some Premier League chat, Newcastle 2, Hull 2. Are Pardew's days numbered, or has he got a job for life?
Well, there are several rumours that
people
I'd love
saying,
to talk about.
Cisse saved his bacon there. I'm not sure. Hull could have won that 4-0.
A couple of tweets said that Pardew ignored the medical advice to play Cisse. Apparently he was told not to play him. And obviously
right?
it's a gamble that's paid off for him. But I've had loads of rumours about Pardew that I can't talk about on this show. I'd love to be able to. But yeah, looks like he's still there for now, fighting.
Yeah.
Fighting. Obviously it's not, I mean look, you know, we all know our opinions on Pardew, but it's obviously not easy for him when he's, you know, managing in that sort of atmosphere. Mm. It's not going to help the team. Now, of course, I understand Newcastle fans' frustration, and their end game is to get rid of him, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I understand why they're doing that. I mean, it's their decision. But of course, it's not an easy environment for the players or the manager, I suppose.
No absolutely not.
At least Ben Arfa didn't score.
Let's go to the Championship.
Yes, let's go to the Championship.
Fulham 0, Blackburn 1. Jordan Rhodes again.
Did Magat go before or after this game?
He was before.
Well, there you go, see?
They only lost 1-0.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Felix Magat is all lifting the lid.
Yeah, you love this, didn't you?
On your favourite German manager. Well, he's responded to comments because Danny Murphy confirmed on Match of the Day 2 that apparently Magat said to Breda Hangeland that he should soak a lump of cheese. I forget which type of cheese. I don't know whether it matters.
Yeah.
Clearly it doesn't. Soak a lump of cheese in alcohol and put it on the injured part of the body.
Yeah.
And Murphy said that is, Hangeland confirmed that that's what happened there. But Magat said, I don't feel remorse towards anybody. He said, I don't mean to sound big-headed, but I'm still convinced that German qualities could do English football a lot of good.
How could he have remorse of anyone?
No, but that's not German qualities.
No.
That's just mental behaviour.
German quality is winning.
Yeah.
But can I just pick up on what Magat said there? I don't feel any remorse or any grievance for anyone, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
you shouldn't do. You've come here.
You've kicked the crap out of a load of youth team players.
Let's just go through the fact. You've come to English football in the Premier League for a king's ransom, I presume. Right? You've blooded, in quotes, in a load of youth team players whose confidence will probably never be the same again.
Blooded being the word.
You've got them relegated and now they're bottom of the championship with 1 point from 8 games. All right, I won't hold it against you for sacking me. Well, good. You know what you shouldn't? Because it's your fault. The least you can do is apologise.
It's sensational, isn't it? It's absolutely extraordinary. There were stories coming out, you may well have heard them, of two youth team players turning up a little bit late for training and McGatt fining them so heavily that some of the senior players, mainly Scott Parker, just went to him and said, this is just ridiculous, you can't treat them like that. And Parker ended up paying the fines.
They should have been on time. They should have been on time.
No, they should have been on time, but they're saying the level of punishment was ridiculous. Yeah. And also there were stories that McGatt would ask people into his office, they'd walk in and he would just sit there eyeballing them for 2 or 3 minutes, not saying a word.
He's not very intimidating looking further, is he?
No, he isn't.
I heard a rumour, I don't know if it's true.
You think, has he forgotten how to speak? That's more likely.
I had a room at one of his German clubs, and I don't know if it's true, but like he would have at the back of the training ground. I forget which club. It's a massive. I wouldn't say that it's like a lower league club or something, but I don't really know all of the teams he's managed. Of course, he's managed in the top flight, but knowing him, it may well have been in the top flight.
Could have been Bayern.
Yeah, there's a massive 3-tiered hill at the back of the training ground, right? Yeah. And towards the end of the training session, or however many hours they train for, probably about 8, he would make them run up and down the hill, up the 3-tier hill, until he said stop, essentially. And of course, him being Felix McGatt, it got dark.
I was going to say.
So all the players were like, oh, good, we don't have to do it anymore, because he won't be able to see if we've got to the top or not. To which apparently McGatt was like, no, you have to bring me back a leaf from the tree at the top.
Oh, my goodness.
To prove that you've done it. I'd have just sent one person up there, got 50 leaves.
It's your go. Oh my goodness.
It's almost like that. He prides that more importantly than the actual game. Well, clearly he does, because they can't buy a win.
Well, he kicks the crap out of them and gets them to the top. I mean, oddly enough, though, his record, fairly recently, he's managed Bayern Munich.
He won the double-double with Bayern Munich.
There was definitely a double.
I think he won the league and cup in 05 and 06, I think.
Yeah, well, there was certainly at least one double in there, definitely. Yeah. So he won the two Bundesligas with Bayern Munich, and you might think to yourself, well, you know, it's Bayern, he should be winning the league. Still, it's a hell of an achievement. But he won the league in 2009 with Wolfsburg.
I remember that, yeah. Was that not with Dzeko and Graffiti up front?
That rings a bell.
Yeah, yeah.
That is remarkable. Yeah. So the guy clearly has some kind of pedigree.
I think it's a case of similar with Capello, who we all respect.
Right,
and
there
know.
You go.
The game's just left him behind a little bit, I think.
But it's not that long ago.
No, it's not.
Capello's achievements and his best achievements were...
Last century, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But what about a little note worth mentioning for Jordan Rhodes, who scored again?
Yeah, Jordan Rhodes, yeah. But Fulham fans, I mean, there'll be much talk about who should take over. Apparently, and Luke Moore, you're having this... Danny Murphy's expressed an interest in the job. Player manager Danny Murphy.
I haven't even needed to link him.
Wouldn't that be something?
It'd be great.
It'd be a shame for Match of the Day, because he's one of my favourite pundits.
Yeah. Well, you might better combine the two.
Let's hope so.
Gus Poyet got fired live on Match of the Day, didn't he? Do you remember that?
What, Murphy gets appointed?
Yeah.
To balance it up.
Oh, do you know that you've got the Fulham job? Oh, brilliant.
You've still got to finish the shift here.
Before I forget, can I just say that if Jordan Rhodes could add goals to his game, he'd be a really good player.
He gets a few, doesn't he?
140 goals in his last 5 seasons.
It's not too shabby.
No,
not too
shabby.
That is absolutely obscene.
That's going up to the beginning of this season.
There you go.
His last 5 years, 140 goals.
Argue against that, I shall not.
No.
Derby drew 2-2 with Cardiff. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he's gone.
Yeah.
Not too surprising.
Cardiff weren't even in the relegation zone when he took over.
No, but it's not too surprising, just the way the football is. And...
No, in the Premier League.
When
he took over, I think they were 17th in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Yeah,
not only just.
Now they're 18th in the Championship, I think, aren't they?
Yeah. What about Leeds?
Or 16th.
Leeds, they look as though they're going to be... well, it's all pretty much a done deal at the time of recording. Darko Milanic has been given the job. He's only managed mainly in Slovenia. He's managed most recently in Austria with Sturm Graz. Only one season there.
He's done a really good job at Maribor, though, hasn't he?
He did. I mean, they won 3 domestic trophies. I think they won the triple there.
Well, they're in the Champions League now as well.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's done well there. But, I mean... It's one of those questions, how come a guy gets a good job like Leeds and maybe not a British manager?
Yeah, I don't want to be too...
Mind you, give it 3 months and we'll have another chance.
Mate, it's plenty of time.
Yeah, any managers who fancy taking over Leeds, keep your eye on the jobs board there.
Yeah. I think, I don't want to be jingoistic about it with the British manager thing and sound a bit like Paul Ince, but like the thing is that... that when you bring a manager in from that far away and from who's maybe from a different culture... It's just another variable, isn't it? Mm. It's just another thing to worry about. Will he settle? Will it transfer? Are the skills transferable?
Yeah,
it's just another thing to worry about. At the time, I mean, of course,
does he speak the language?
Chiellino's a disaster. We know that he's an absolute horror show. So that aside, Neil Redfern's actually doing an okay job, isn't he?
Yeah, they played really well. They won 3-0. Played some good football on the weekend. I mean, but it's obviously.
I think they've won like three of the last four. They're doing okay.
Have they?
Yeah, yeah.
They are. Give him their job.
Yeah. Did you see Grant Leadbitter's goal for Middlesbrough against Brentford? That was an
the
absolute
4-0.
Beauty. Mm. Yeah, he's got 6 and 8 from midfield.
Those were some lovely goals. They're always his lovely goals. We didn't even mention Crankar's free kick. There was so much happening in the Premier League.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. After I slated him last week.
That's right, he had a great
game. I don't want to slate him for the sake of slating him, because I think he's a good player.
Well, you didn't really slate him, you slated the tactics.
He can't play in a central midfield too. I think he was moved a bit further out this game, wider, because Barton was back.
Yeah.
So I think he's obviously more effective.
Free roll.
Yeah, exactly.
Free roll. Let him do what he wants.
Before we go on to, what do you want to do next, La Liga?
We could admit a little mention of La Liga.
Yeah, before we go on to that, Elliot Coombs Facebooked us saying, what's Pete's worst habit?
Editing.
I was thinking that he eats quite a lot of weird smelly food.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah,
remember he got sent some was it biltong?
No, he got sent some sort of weird food from Thailand, didn't he?
Yeah, through just in the post. We picked it up at work where he works, Absolute Radio, and he went, oh yeah, this guy sends me stuff all the time, and just opens a packet and starts munching. I'm like, well, hang on, Pete.
It was food I've never seen before.
Yeah.
He's got
but it didn't look desirable, and it's, you don't know who.
He's got a huge propensity for weird food.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. I think that's probably his biggest flaw.
See, biltong's not very nice.
I like talking about him when he's not here.
Yeah. Is he not? He, you know, that's a weird thing about Pete. He could be watching us in some kind of capacity.
Up. He could turn up. Of course, drunken purchases, but we all know about that.
Yeah.
That's one of his best habits.
That I was going to say. Yeah. I was going to say, his whimsical drunken purchases.
Just take a moment to imagine what he's going to bring back from South Korea. That's something we can all look forward to next
Who
week.
Who he's going to bring back from South Korea would be a better question. Well, he's got Japan as well.
Yeah, true.
He might lose it in Japan, but he'll have a chance to get it back. Mm. Magnificent stuff. Shall we go to La Liga?
Yes.
Where are my notes? I'm all over the shop here. Oh, yeah, La Liga. Atleti, they drop points at home to Celta Vigo 2-2.
Oh, that Hernandez goal was an absolute beauty, wasn't
what
it?
What a wonderful piece of opportunism.
Yeah.
He just flicked his leg up in the air. If you haven't watched that, you must. The Celta Vigo first goal in the Atleti game.
It's the sort of goal that you would think only someone like Zlatan would try.
Yeah. There's a bit of that going on, isn't there? Mm. Certainly. The two goals from Atleti, the centre-backs Miranda and Godin scored, that's just, they use the set pieces so well, don't they?
They do. I think Godin, I mean, I was thinking about this earlier, because Godin's obviously a great defender and stuff, but he's not actually scored that many goals for a defender in his career, but in the last season or so, he's really added that to
that's
his game.
That's Simeone, really, the tactics
and,
there.
And I think he scored 8 goals last season, which isn't too bad.
And in crucial moments.
He was linked with the big move to Bayern in the summer as well, which obviously didn't come off, but that shows how highly he's regarded.
That'd have been a shame.
He's such a danger from set pieces, he really is.
Indeed. Real Madrid beat Deportivo 8-2. My giddy aunt Zinedine Zidane's under investigation. People complaining about he doesn't have the relevant qualifications.
Oh, wow.
Cutting corners again, the big boys, aren't they?
That Hernandez goal, the Chicharito goal, oh, what a beauty off the bench. That game was amazing. There's so much instant. I genuinely think Deportivo, I watched this back again, I genuinely think Deportivo could have scored 5 or 6.
Yeah.
It could have been 8-6. It's the same old Real Madrid, right, we're bombing on. Fair enough, I'm not having a go at them. They scored 8 goals.
8 goals.
You can't argue with that. Ronaldo's chipped in with another hat-trick. A ridiculous header that only he could score. Going backwards away from goal, like 15 yards out, heads it into the top corner.
That's quality.
From a floated cross as well. Obviously, Bale got a couple and stuff. But I just thought they left the back door open and Deportivo could have scored so many.
Mm, indeed.
I don't know what the goalkeeper's doing for that third goal as well. He's seen Manuel Neuer the day before or something and thought, right, I'm having a bit of this. There's two defenders there to clear it up. Yeah. The ball is 50 yards out of goal and he still comes out.
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy.
Absolutely. That was absolutely wonderful.
Defending
stuff.
Is dead.
We're talking about long range goals. We have to go at the Bundesliga.
Yes.
An 83 yarder.
That's unbelievable. It's hard to know how a.
It won't surprise you, that's a record.
The reason that. Well, I was about to say, the reason that record was unlikely to be broken because very, very rarely does an outfield player. I mean, because obviously it's a record for an outfield player.
Yeah, sure. Because a goalkeeper, we've seen once or twice, a
indeed,
boot out.
Indeed.
Yeah.
It's very rare an outfield player will get a chance to do that. And the reason I like that goal is was for Paderborn, wasn't it? They were top of the league.
It's incredible. They've only got 15,000 seat at stadium, a small club.
Yeah. The only thing I can remember about Paderborn is when it was a few years ago. I think Paderborn were the team.
I'd never heard of them.
So they beat Hamburg, I think, in a cup game.
That was quite an infamous one.
Yeah, and the referee was then sent to prison for match fixing.
Bribery, yeah.
Yeah. Apart from that, I didn't really know much about them, but obviously they're top of the league at the moment. But the reason I loved that goal was a Stoppelkamp who scored it.
Yeah.
Said it was because whenever you see a player presented with an opportunity like that, a lot of times they'll fluff it. Balotelli did it a week or two ago. Yeah, they'll snatch at it. Not him. Calm.
Yeah.
Cool as a cucumber.
But the fact that he shot from there, people would have a dribble. But wasn't it laces?
Yeah.
It was perfect.
Well, you'd
technique.
Have to be laces. You'd have to be laces.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Well, a toe punt maybe. But it was in the air. Absolutely wonderful goal. Mm. And before we leave, in fact, no, we're going to leave Europe. We're going to go quickly to Australia because Vishnu Chari says, what you guys think will happen in the A-League this year? Luke, any ideas?
Yeah, it's difficult to say.
I think the best team will win.
Yeah, I do too. Let's be derisive of the A-League.
Well,
let's just belittle it.
Now Heskey's gone.
Yeah,
our interests have plummeted somewhat. But quickly to Brazil, there was Curitiba striker Joel disappearing down a hole. Celebrating
I saw that.
Goal.
Yeah, yeah.
My goodness, yeah. That was
it was all right that one in the end.
Thank goodness he was.
Yeah,
don't have put cones around it.
Yeah.
Do something.
To be fair, it was covered, wasn't it? It just disappeared through it.
That was the point. It was covered, and he didn't see the hole because it was covered.
It's like a trap.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And then, of course, you've got Watchgate. The Brazilian Football Federation giving the representatives of all 32 World Cup teams the Parmigiani watches. They're going to have to return them because FIFA Ethics Committee have woken up.
I like the idea that even when this is all said and done, all the people that received them said, oh yeah, well, we'll give them back. That's not the point. So basically, you've been caught, so you're given back. That's not the principle of it.
Can we have the bribery money back? That's not allowed. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah,
no bother at all. Do we have any more little questions or anything?
Yeah, I've got a few little ones to finish off with.
Yeah,
I think we've been talking a long time.
I think we've done it.
Matthew Eve says, who would win in a bare-knuckle brawl between Ray Winston's virtual disembodied head from that advert and Tiggy Rainbow using Man United's front four as his arms and legs like some kind of humanoid robot? Well, the first thing to remember
our listenership, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, the first, you could have chosen any question. You've chosen that one. That's bad enough. The second thing that's bad is that's got in.
Oh, well, it's got to be Tiggy Rainbow because it's
the
head.
The first thing to remember, though,
you
is
can't
Ray
brawl with the head.
But Ray Winston's big.
No, but it's just a head.
Tiggy Rainbow's very small.
But it's just a head. Tiggy would run around behind him and whack Falcao against his head.
Yeah, Tiggy is small, but he's not averse to dirty tactics.
Why are we attempting to answer this question?
Well, you got to feel the questions you're given.
You can only answer the questions that are put in front of you.
Exactly. So we think Tiggy.
Yeah,
but
we're going
Ray Winston isn't to be underestimated.
Oh,
even
no,
if he
it'll take him. A while. But it'll be a bit like a bit of a naff computer game when you've got the big boss man who's clearly more powerful than you, but you just kind of got to work away and give him
busy.
Enough jabs.
Stay busy, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And eventually you'll wear him down.
I don't think... I mean, Tiggy... As far as I remember, Tiggy Rainbow was not a tough man.
No.
He was certainly not a fighter, but he was...
He was on security in the union.
Yeah, there you're talking.
In the bar.
That says more about the union than Tiggy Rainbow.
Yeah.
I hope that answers your question, Matthew. We've spent a minute of our own valuable audio real estate answering that. And just to finish off real quick... we've got a new little hashtag that sort of sprung up organically.
Oh, yeah.
Hashtag press room spy. Tom Pyman says, I was at Sheffield Wednesday on Saturday and can confirm that Ian Dowie likes plenty of gravy on his chicken pie.
Mm. That's fair enough.
To which Peter Selby said, no Jeff Shreve's press room antics at Leicester, but I can confirm that Martin Keown loves an egg sandwich.
Good man.
So keep those coming.
I like an egg and ham sandwich.
I don't know about you guys, but I'd love to know more about players like that behind the scenes, little media people, players, pros behind the scenes. So keep those coming in.
You're picking up where I dropped the ball. You're picking up the ball where I dropped the ball with Zidane not actually noticing what dessert he had.
Remember that, yeah.
In the Champions League final. I saw him having dessert, but I didn't quite clock what it was. And again, I apologise.
Yeah, you need to up your press room spy game.
Yeah,
and just quickly before we go...
I'm glad I've inspired people.
Fred Kortvrend, I think that's called, that's his name, saying he was annoyed because he didn't get a name check when he correctly guessed Kevin Keegan talking German on the Mystery Voice a week or two ago. I think that went to the spam, so sorry about that, Fred, but you got your mention now, so there you go.
Yeah, stop spamming us.
Yeah.
Spam an egg sandwich, that'd be quite
nice. That's another one.
Well, I'll finish off just with an email. I think it's for the attention of me, purely looking at the content of it. Hello, the Football Ramble. My name is... My name is Majerka Magic, and I look for talented people like you. I had a chance to listen to your joke, and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thanks,
so
Magic.
I assume that was one for me. So thanks Mr. Kamagic. Appreciate that.
Could be a missus.
Could be. So there we are. We did it. We got through it.
Yeah.
Please don't give us any feedback. It's done, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen. We've all got through it together.
We fulfilled our contractual obligations. No, it was lots of fun. It was good.
And we'll leave it there.
I don't think we need these boys back.
But yeah, if you want to get in touch with, I mean, you've seen the level of. The level of questioning.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you can contribute somewhere down the line. Don't be afraid to send us an email as well. Yeah. The email address is show@thefootballramble.com. The Twitter is @footballramble, and of course the website is thefootballramble.com.
Indeed.
That's it, Luke.
I think we're back with a full house next week, will we?
Certainly. Three of us anyway.
Be nice, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. Thank you for bearing with us.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.